Good morning, everyone. I thank everybody for the really warm welcome. I baptized myself in my bathtub. You got to do what you got to do, I guess. But I tell you what, being with the saints in Gettysburg has been such a blessing to me. Stephen baptized me Friday morning at 12:30 a.m. He told me that if I ever decided, because I was convinced initially that it was good enough, but with my studies with Stephen, I changed my mind. And he told me that if I ever changed my mind, that I could contact him anytime, even if it was midnight, any minute. And I've adopted the same philosophy since. So if there's anybody here who's stirred up by the things I'm sharing, if you want to talk about it, contact me anytime, even midnight. I might not get back to you right away. You can try. Maybe I'm up. So for our lesson this morning, we are in Nehemiah chapter 4. I'm just going to be very straightforward with you guys, my purpose in my lesson and my bias. I want to talk about how Christians should handle danger. And my bias is I'm a risk taker. I'll tell you that right now. And if you're listening to what I'm saying and you think to yourself, well, he's saying that because he likes taking risks, there might be some truth to that. But if you do feel that way, at least check it to the word first to make sure it's actually not my bias, but maybe it's the word. So with that being said, let's get the context of Nehemiah. Nehemiah is a man who is a big encouragement to me because, as far as I know, he's not a prophet, he's not a priest or a king. He's an ordinary guy who is working for the king, who was the emperor over the known world at the time. And King Artaxerxes noticed that Nehemiah was sad. Well, Nehemiah was upset because he'd gotten word from his brother that things in Jerusalem, the rebuilding that was going on, was not going well. So Nehemiah went before the king with his problem. He prayed. The king heard him out, and he gave Nehemiah the permission, the supplies, and everything that he needed to go and to continue the work in rebuilding the walls of Jerusalem so that worship could happen at the temple again. Now, things go pretty smoothly for the most part in chapters 1, 2, and 3. They do get some pushback in chapter 2, verse 10, with our two enemies of our story tonight, this morning, Sanballat and Tobiah. When they first hear of the work, it displeased them, but it doesn't say too much of what they do. But then later in the text, in verse 19 of chapter 2, Sanballat and Tobiah, again, they despise the Jews and jeer at them and start questioning their motives. Probably not a genuine question, more of a political attack. They say publicly, "What is this thing you are doing? Are you rebelling against the king?" But Nehemiah just kind of blows them off, gives them a reply where God's going to make them prosper, and they just continued on, right? They stayed busy. And chapter 3 details the work of what they do. It gives names, talks a whole lot about different gates and names. And you guys should be glad we're not studying chapter 3 this morning. It'd be quite the dry sermon. But instead, we're doing chapter 4, which transitions more from the details of who was doing what and where to how they handled the danger. As you might expect, people with political motivations aren't happy when their enemies start doing well. So Sanballat and Tobiah have a couple problems with what Nehemiah is doing. And the whole purpose of our lesson this morning is to look at how Nehemiah and his brothers handle this danger. So please read with me Nehemiah chapter 4, verses 1 through 5. Now when Sanballat heard that we were building the wall, he was angry and greatly enraged, and he jeered at the Jews. And he said in the presence of his brothers and the army of Samaria, "What are these feeble Jews doing? Will they restore it for themselves? Will they sacrifice? Will they finish it up in a day? Will they revive the stones out of the heaps of rubbish and burned ones at that?" And Tobiah the Ammonite was beside him and said, "Yes. What they are building, if a fox goes up on the wall, it will break. If the fox goes up on it, it will break down their stone wall. Hear, O God, for we are despised. Turn back their taunt on their own heads and give them up to be plundered in a land where they are captives. Do not cover their guilt and let not their sin be blotted out from your sight, for they have provoked you to anger in the presence of the builders." So Sanballat and Tobiah start attacking the Jews. I imagine this is in a public sense. I don't know if they did this by writing or just through public discourse. But they start upping their attacks. This is just verbal for the most part, but it's quite insulting. Sanballat especially, he is quite thorough. He attacks their physical bodies. He says they're feeble. He attacks their ability to do the work. He asks if they are capable of restoring it themselves. Will they sacrifice? He questions their faithfulness about their religion. He questions their capability of doing it on time. And he questions the materials they're working with. Are they going to be able to rebuild the wall with these burnt stones? He attacks them in every matter that would be quite personal or important to the Jews. Kind of think of Tobiah as Sanballat's dumb crony. And he says, yeah, what they are building, if a fox goes up on the wall, break it down. Kind of less intelligence, maybe. I don't know. That's just the way I view the text. But so Tobiah says that it can't even hold a fox. I don't know if any of you have seen a fox in person. One time Mike Mioza and I were hiking, and we were hiking in freshly blade snow, and we tracked the fox. That was really fun. And when we finally caught up to it and found it, it was just a little thing. And Tobiah is saying that a little fox, no bigger than a cat, that's going to knock down their wall. Talk about flimsy. Even a Ford could handle that. So Tobiah and Sanballat are insulting the Jews. And what I want for us to look at is look at Nehemiah's response. Now, verse 4 is kind of jarring because of how quickly it transfers over from the enemies to Nehemiah's narrative. And I like it. I like the way it's written because it shows just how immediately Nehemiah went to prayer. He's insulted, and instead of replying, he immediately goes to God. Now, I know sometimes calls to prayer and a reminder of the importance of prayer can almost get repetitive. But I think it's necessary. Just ask yourself, the last time you were insulted, especially by a non-believer, what was your response? Was it typing something in reply on the internet, tell them how you felt and how they were hypocrites? Or did you follow what Jesus said and prayed for your enemies right away? You know, I imagine we'd bring a lot less shame to God if instead of every time we're insulted, instead of replying immediately, we took some time to pray. Some people might even say that we do a whole lot less discourse that way, but I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing either. Anyway, Nehemiah prays to God, and notice, it might be a little bit jarring, the content of his prayer. He asks God to punish him, but it's going to be quite clear when you read the text that Nehemiah was handing over judgment to the Lord. That's what we believe, right? That Romans says, judgment is mine. Thus says the Lord, right? Nehemiah was practicing that in his prayer. He was handing the judgment to God. I love verse 6. Read with me in verse 6. It says, so we built the wall. Like, that's a logical response. They're being insulted. Their work ethic is being questioned. Their dedication is being questioned. So what do in response? They pray and they build the wall. And all the wall was joined together to half its height, for the people had a mind to work. Keep that in mind. I think that statement is only shows up once in this chapter, but these people are never going to change their mind. Keep that in mind. I firmly believe every decision they make throughout this entire text is for that single purpose. The people had a mind to work. So they built a wall, and believe it or not, Sanballat and Tobiah are not happy about that. Verse 7, when Sanballat and Tobiah and the Arabs and the Ammonites and the Ashdodites heard that the repairing of the walls of Jerusalem was going forward and that the breaches were beginning to be closed, they were very angry. Excuse me, I'll stop yelling. And they all plotted together to come and fight against Jerusalem and cause confusion in it. And we prayed to our God and set a guard as protection against them day and night. Number one, don't be surprised if somebody insults you, the world comes after you, Satan attacks you, and you resist. Don't be surprised if they up their power level a little bit and start attacking you even more. Don't think they're content for just bluffs. When Sanballat and Tobiah, the enemies of the Jews, see their words not coming to pass, they're not going to be content with that. When has a proud man ever been happy to see himself being proved wrong? They come after the Jews even harder, and they move on from insults to wanting to provide injury. They say they're going to attack. They plotted together to come and fight against Jerusalem. And it's not just Sanballat and Tobiah. It's the Arabs and the Ammonites and the Ashdodites. They have a whole crowd of different tribes who are ready to attack the Jews. Now, that'd be quite intimidating. Once again, verse 9. What is their immediate response? Prayer. Then they set a guard as protection. I could be wrong about this order, but I think the order listed is on purpose. I think too often we start setting our protections first. We make ourselves feel physically safe, and then we pray, and then we seek God. It's going to be abundantly clear as we read through the text. Yes, Nehemiah did take physical precautions, but his safety, his comfort came from God. That's why they sought him so fervently. And we talked about how Christians should handle danger. And perhaps you might be expecting, I'm just going to go on and rattle on about being brave, be brave, be brave. And yes, we should be brave. But also, taking precautions are also important. We see Nehemiah here, after he prays, he doesn't say, oh, God will protect us, everybody, just keep on going on as before, they're not going to ever come after us. No, Nehemiah is not a fool. He takes precautions. Sometimes, I'll admit this, even though I'm a risk taker, I have seen the work be hindered because of men or women who've taken unnecessary risks. There's a family at Gettysburg who I love a whole lot. And at one time, when the husband was still alive, he worked overseas in Turkey. Now, at the time, the U.S. had good relations with Turkey, and they allowed him to come. And there was a law there that you were not allowed to evangelize to a Muslim unless they came to you first and asked you questions about your religion. So Jim and Nyla, probably I'm sure some of you know Jim and Nyla Craig. Jim and Nyla Craig respected the law. They didn't push any boundaries, but they made their faith apparent. It was at one point illegal for anybody to gather together in groups, especially a church, and they did anyway. They didn't do it out in the middle of the street. They did it secretly and quietly in their homes, but they were faithful and they did what they needed to do regardless of what the law said. And they had a Bible study going on with a young man who was the attorney general's son. And it was going pretty well. He was coming to them, asking them questions about their faith. But then a young man, I don't know if he had just moved in or he was local to the area, but he was zealous. He was really zealous. And this young guy thought he was like Paul. So he was going to take unlimited risks because he felt like God would protect him, which that guy did live, and that might be by the grace of God that guy survived. But he was a really big risk taker. And one day, the Craigs had that young man over who they were talking to about the Bible, and that other young man, the risk taker, came in, and he was going to really show Jim and Nyla how you evangelize. He brought all this literature, he threw it in front of the young man, and he ran. He was intimidated by all of that. It was quite assertive, the way their friend handled that. He ran right home to his mother, who was the attorney general. Jim and Nyla could have gotten in really big trouble from that. And in fact, the young man later came and told them that if it wasn't for the fact he had developed such a good relationship with them, they most likely would have been sent to jail by his mother. And unfortunately, the young man never came to talk with them anymore because he was so put off. We might praise the risk taker for being brave, but he was just foolish. He ruined an opportunity that Jim and Nyla had carefully cultivated just because he was reckless. I'm sure you've encountered multiple situations like that, maybe not quite like that, but you're talking with somebody, you're being very careful. Maybe a well-meaning brother or sister comes in and, like a wrecking ball just trashes everything because you're not being assertive enough. Sometimes risk takers and reckless people get themselves into trouble. Nehemiah is not like that. He trusts in God, but he also takes precaution, doesn't he? Continue on with me in verses 10 through 14. And Judah was said, the strength of those who bear the burdens is failing. There is too much rubble. By ourselves, we will not be able to rebuild the wall. And our enemy said, they will not know or see till we come among them and kill them and stop the work. I want you to please pay attention to verse 12. At that time, the Jews who lived near them came from all directions and said to us 10 times, you must return to us. So in the lowest parts of the space behind the wall, in open places, I stationed the people by their clans with their swords, their spears, and their bows. And I looked around, I looked and arose and said to the nobles and to the officials and to the rest of the people, do not be afraid of them. Remember the Lord who is great and awesome, and fight for your brothers, your sons, your daughters, your wives, and your homes. I love this section. A lot of challenging things here, but a whole lot of encouragement. First of all, where is the majority of the discouragement coming from? I want you to think about that. Read verses 10, 11, and 12 again to yourself. Ignore me for a little bit if you have to. Where is the majority of the discouragement coming from here? A little bit's coming from Sanballat and Tobiah and their enemies in verse 11. But in verse 10 and 12, it's coming from their brethren. And it's not just, hey, Brother Nehemiah, maybe consider taking it a little bit easy here. No, verse 12, 10 times they say, you must return to us. I think the most disorienting and discouraging thing that can happen to a Christian is not always when our enemies attack us, but it's when our brethren tell us to stop the work. Man, I imagine that would have been quite hard. All the work they're putting into rebuilding the wall so people can begin worship at the temple again safely, and the very people who they're fighting for are coming to them and telling them to stop. Now, I have two applications I want to make with that, and I hope I can make it quite clear and effective. First application I want to make is for us risk takers. Look at verse 13. Does Nehemiah ignore the concerns that his brethren have in verse 13? No, he doesn't. He takes even more precautions. He gets down to the lowest parts. He's not letting them sneak in. He's going to have people stationed there, right? They are not going to sneak in and attack the work. But those of us who are cautious, please, does Nehemiah stop the work? No. Not only does he not stop the work, he actually encourages them. Verse 12. And I looked and arose and said to the nobles and to the officials and to the rest of the people, do not be afraid of them. Remember the Lord, who is great and awesome. Fight for your brothers, your sons, your wives, your daughters, and your homes. Nehemiah took precautions. He had plenty of swords and shields, but was that where he was going to put his faith about how well they were going to be protected? No. I gave you guys a story about how recklessness can harm the gospel. I want to tell you a story about how being too careful can get in the way of the gospel. Now, for those of you who are careful people and you were saying amen to me stepping on the toes of the reckless, please listen to this just as well. And I hate to use COVID as an example, but I have limited experience, so please be patient with me. But there was a guy where I worship in Gettysburg who was studying with some ladies who he got connected with because there was a Christian woman who had a bunch of friends who wanted to learn the Bible. She didn't feel quite ready to teach yet, so she asked the preacher to come. Stephen studied with them for about a year or two. Then Scott studied with them for about a year or two. Then Jonathan Sadler came and studied with them for a year or two. And then when COVID came, some people really encouraged the person who was currently studying with them to stop. You'd been already studying with them for about a year. Other people have been studying with them for years. It's much wiser to take precautions and to stop the study. So they stopped for a while. And the woman who was hosting the study knew how reckless I am, and she asked me to come, right? And of course I came. And within a few months, one of the women there were baptized. Imagine if I decided to be careful and say, no, I don't want to get sick. I don't know if that woman would have been baptized. I pray to God she would have been. If you seek, you find. But thankfully, I was reckless enough to go. Now, once again, I'm not praising recklessness. But there is a balance between being careful and also being brave to do the work. Nehemiah and his brethren had a mind to work, so they didn't stop. They took precaution, they trusted in God, and they continued working. Verse 15. Oh, one last thing before I move on. I'm not letting the careful people off the hook yet. Seriously, verse 12. Brethren, let's not be the brethren in verse 12. Let's encourage instead of discourage. Okay, now you're safe. Verse 15. When our enemies heard that it was known to us and that God had frustrated their plan, we all returned to the wall, each to his work. From that day on, half of my servants worked on construction and half held the spears, shields, bows, and coats of mail. And the leaders stood behind the whole house of Judah. I love that. Having good leadership is so good. Verse 17, who were building on the wall, those who carried the burdens were loaded in such a way that each labored on the work with one hand and held his weapon in the other. And each of the builders had his sword strapped at his side while he built. The man who sounded the trumpet was beside me. And I said to the nobles and to the officials and to the rest of the people, the work is great and widely spread, and we are separated on the wall, far from one another. In the place where you hear the sound of the trumpet, rally to us there. Our God will fight for us. So they're brave, right? They take precautions. They have a mind to work. But you know what I think? Well, what we can see here as being a reason why they were able to do that so well is they had good leadership that organized them. I don't know what the elders here have done about in case there's ever persecution, and I'm just a young man with limited experience, but I would highly recommend making a plan. Do you guys here know what you're going to do in case things get really tough in this country? Where are you going to worship? How are you going to communicate? Make a plan. That's what Nehemiah did. Very thankfully, they didn't have to use that plan, but I think it's really wise to have it just in case. Make a plan. Be ready. And because they had that plan, because everybody was in agreement and the leaders were behind it in verse 16, I'd imagine being one of the builders, you had a lot of confidence behind what you were doing. Also, notice this. In a time of danger, in a time of uncertainty, in a time of hardship, don't expect the work to continue like it has been before. Notice in verse 18, there was major change to the way the work was being done. I did a little bit of masonry for a while. It's really hard to hold something in your hand while also using a trowel. That's very difficult. It probably made the work slower, more uncomfortable, and a whole lot more frustrating. Things were definitely different, but they had a mind to work. And a whole lot of slow, frustrating work is a whole lot better than no work. Sometimes, if we're going to continue the work in times of danger, in times of difficulty, don't be surprised if things are different from before. That's okay. It didn't stop Nehemiah. They continued. Now, I told you that there's one way why I think this was feasible, but actually, there's actually two. In fact, even more so than verse 6, the people having a mind to work, I think what we read in verses 21 through 23 shows the biggest reason why they were able to stick together, to be brave, to take precautions, and to do the work. Read with me 21 through 23. So we labored at the work, and half of them held the spears from the break of dawn until the stars came out. I also said to the people at that time, let every man and his servant pass the night within Jerusalem, that they may be willing, that they may be a guard for us by night, and may labor by day. So neither I nor my brothers, nor my servants, nor the men of the guard who followed me, none of us took off our clothes. Each kept his weapon at his right hand. You know, it can be easy to gloss over that, but that's extremely significant. They were so dedicated to the work, they were so brave to continue it, yet also precautious enough to do absolutely everything they could to do it safely. To the point they were willing to sacrifice comfort and time with their family as far as not even being willing to go home to change their clothes. How many of you guys here would be willing to stay here just so you can make it to church on Sunday and wear the same clothes for a couple days or a couple weeks? You wouldn't be willing to do that. I know that. I wouldn't. And I need to change that. Man, imagine how much they stunk, too. They're in Israel building a wall. You know their wives threw them into the river as soon as they got home. But seriously, that would have been really uncomfortable. Really uncomfortable. Yet, because they had a mind to work, because their faith was so strong within the Lord, they continued. But them continuing and being brave in the same hand also required different precautions and sacrifice. And see, I think that's where the risk taker and the cautious person is going to be able to meet. I know that's my fault. The reason why I've done harm due to my unnecessary bravery or recklessness is because I've not been willing enough to sacrifice in places I'm able to accommodate those who want to take more precautions. There's been plenty of opportunities for me to continue the work just fine, but I didn't want to be uncomfortable. I didn't want to change my habits or change what I was used to take a few more precautions. I'm not going to speak for you cautious people, but I'd like to ask, have there been any places in your life where you could have made a couple sacrifices, been a little bit more uncomfortable in order to continue the work? That's where I want to end us at this morning. I don't know if I went on too long or if I was too short, but regardless of the time spent, I hope this text was helpful.